So here we are on the Shabbat before Resurrection Sunday, otherwise called Easter. Doesn't matter what name you call it, Jesus rose on that day. And that's what we're here to celebrate. And it's an intimidating privilege to be able to share with you on this special morning. It's known as Holy Saturday in some traditions. I'll call it Holy Shabbat. And this year is kind of similar to the original Passion Weekend, especially if you're reading the Gospel of John, where Jesus died yesterday. I don't know if he died on Thursday or Friday. But during the Shabbat, he was definitely dead. We've read a lot of passages this morning, and I hope we're all mulling through them in our mind about Jesus being uniquely begotten, Son of God. Jesus is a Passover lamb, and Jesus as a tabernacle who dwelled among us and took on himself all of our impurities and sins. We read the entire Psalm 22. According to Babylonian Talmud, that's what Queen Esther said when she was on her way to ask the king to save her people, knowing full well she might die. In Talmud Bavli, Megillah 15b, it says, Rabbi Levi said, when she reached the chamber of the idols, the divine presence left her. She said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Do you perchance punish the inadvertent offense like the presumptuous one, meaning the mistake for the one on purpose, or one done under compulsion like one done willingly? Or is it because I called him dog, I suppose referring to Haman, as it says, deliver my soul from the sword, mine only one from the power of the dog? She straightaway retracted and called him lion, as it says, save me from the lion's mouth. So this feeling she had that God's presence had left her. We, as Christians, when we hear this word, we think of Jesus' final words on the cross. And that same feeling of feeling cut off that Kinida was talking about this morning. That Kinida already preached my sermon for me. So this is just kind of like the second course. These words seem to be bleak. But as you remember the end of the chapter, it's actually positive. And by quoting the first line, Jesus could be calling the whole psalm to mind. It's a very rabbinic way of saying things because people knew their Bibles really well. By the way, if you're confused with the words of the cross and you want to know between Matthew and Mark, what was that word he actually said? Is it Eli, Eli? Is it Eloi, Eloi? Randall Booth has a great article. I can give it to you afterwards. And what's Mark doing? What's Matthew doing? Why are they a little different? It's a good read. But speaking of bleak going to positive, I want to focus on this Shabbat in the middle of the resurrection story. And I want to focus on this Shabbat way back then because I think if we can appreciate what was happening and the irony involved there, it will give us a lot of hope for our own life. So remember at the Last Supper, Jesus tells the disciples that one of them will betray him. And we all know who that one is, right? It's Judas Iscariot. But really, they all were. The verses after the passage we read in the liturgy thing said, I'm reading from Matthew 26:31. Then Jesus said to them, this night you will all fall away because of me. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I'm raised, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. Peter said to him, if they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away. Jesus said to him, I tell you the truth. On this night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Peter said to him, even if I must die with you, I will never deny you. And all the disciples said the same thing. That caught my eye as I was preparing. All the disciples said the same thing. So, bear that in mind. They're all saying that. Skip ahead in the arrest scene. I'm going to read from verse 55 in the same passage in Matthew 26. At that moment, Jesus said to the crowd, "Have you come out with swords and clubs to arrest me like you would an outlaw? Day after day I sat teaching in the temple courts, yet you did not arrest me. But this has happened so that the scriptures of prophets would be fulfilled." Then all the disciples left him and fled. So, all those people that were going to die with him, all the disciples fled. All of them. Also, when you think about the crucifixion scene, keeps mentioning everybody's watching from a distance. We know the famous story of Peter at the fireplace. He's watching from a distance. He denies Jesus. Also, the women from Galilee who were following him, they were watching from a distance. And those were probably the brave ones. We find out later that they were all holed up in a room hiding, most of his followers, or the tight ring of followers. And what about all those other thousands of followers? What were they doing? They were off hiding in their houses. There's a lot of mystery and confusion that hovers over this story. And please don't get me wrong. We know what happened ultimately, right? Jesus rose from the dead, and that fact changed history. And that's why we're all here today. But I want to put ourselves in the Shabbat of that time. What was going on? What did the disciples feel? What did they think? So again, some of the details, when you line up the Gospels, it's hard to find a timeline that works for everyone. But I tend to see it as the resurrection happening on Motzei Shabbat, because there is a rabbinic saying, the first light of the Yom Rishon, of Sunday. And it makes sense that if the women were there to embalm him right before Shabbat, that they would try to finish the job when Shabbat went out. However, they showed up late Motzei Shabbat, found an empty tomb. That would have been when the guards saw the angels and collapsed in fright. And then they run away. And we see a picture in Mark 16 that's a little different, that kind of maybe highlights this this first sighting. I'll read from Mark 16, verse 8. This is about the women. "Then they went out and ran from the tomb, for terror and bewilderment had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid." That's not usually what we read on Easter morning. We like to read from John. And I think John is what happened the following morning, true Sunday morning by our measure. They must have gotten the courage to say something by then, because Peter and John go to the tomb to check it out, and they find it exactly as the women had described. So by the way, on the timeline thing, if you're thinking, well, wait, how does 3 days fit with that? Rest assured, it's very biblical. If you have part of 3 days, that's 3 days. If a king in the Bible rules 2 years and 1 day, he ruled 3 years. If you don't believe me, ask Professor Zakovich at Hebrew University. He'll tell you there's no problem there with the time. So we don't know exactly how many hours, but Shabbat, he's in the grave. The women go, terror, bewilderment, fear. These are strong words, and they're very real. The community who was following him, the believers, are in shock, and they don't know what's going on. So let's think about it now. The very moment in history when the biggest act of salvation is being worked out, no one knows it. And not only do they not know it, they seem to assume the opposite. They are in complete despair. They don't understand what God is doing. It all seems black. I almost titled this talk Black Sabbath, but being a child of the 80s, I didn't have the guts to redeem that title from the heavy metal band, and I don't want you guys to get the wrong idea. Let's call it Dark Shabbat. But followers of Jesus had totally denied him, and all hope seemed lost. It really did. The end of Mark's gospel really gives you this sense. Chapter 16, verse 9. Early on the first day of the week, after he arose, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, from whom he had driven out seven demons. She went out and told those who were with him, while they were mourning and weeping. And when they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they did not believe. Mark also tells us in verse 12, the same chapter, after this he appeared in a different form to two of them while they were on their way to the country. They went back and told the rest, but they did not believe them. So in Luke, we also get the road to Emmaus, those two that Jesus went. And if you read it in Luke, they're all concerned and sorrowful and talking. And that's how Jesus walks up and said, "What's bothering you guys?" And they say, "You know, are you the only one in Jerusalem that doesn't know what's been going on?" And they give a recount. And in that recount of what happened, you'll see that they even say, some of the women say he rose again. But they didn't even believe it. Like, they weren't able to take it in. And they were sad. And it was only when Jesus started explaining scriptures and then he broke bread with them that, oh, then they got it and ran back to the others. And then you have this verse. The others didn't believe them. So no one believes at first. They're all too busy mourning and weeping. And maybe they're a little confused. And they're still in hiding. Now I'll read from Luke 24:36. We're in the upper room. While they were saying these things, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." But they were startled and terrified, thinking they saw a ghost. Then he said to them, "Why are you frightened? And why do doubts arise in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. It's me. Touch me and see. A ghost doesn't have flesh and bones like you see I have." When he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while they still could not believe, because of their joy, and were amazed, he said to them, "Do you have anything here to eat?" So they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate it in front of them. So this Shabbat, before Jesus rose, people were really depressed. Now, what was Jesus doing at that very time? What was he doing during Shabbat? So, according to a somewhat hard verse to understand, he was preaching to people in hell, I guess. 1 Peter 3:18 and 19. "Because Christ also suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust, to bring you to God, by being put to death in the flesh, but being made alive in the spirit. In it he went and preached to the spirits in prison." So we don't have much else to go on in terms of what Jesus is doing on Shabbat. But it seems like Jesus is delivering people from the deepest bondage and darkness that there is. Do you feel the irony here? On the human plane, it's completely black and hopeless. And on the spiritual plane, it's the very essence of hope. So, while salvation history is being made, on the one hand, no one has a clue. And they think it's all for nothing. So here's my point. If that is true of the cataclysmic event of the resurrection, how much more is it true in our everyday lives? Because we're humans, and we do not always see God working, even at the moments of big salvation and spiritual breakthroughs. We may not feel anything. God is at work exactly at the time that it looks and feels least likely. Yet in his timing, he will break forth in glorious day. If God was doing his biggest work of salvation on this dark Sabbath, at his followers' lowest point, think what he can do in your life right now. Think of all you can't even see. I find a lot of encouragement in this irony. And I can trust these witnesses to Jesus' resurrection even more because I see they are real like me. They weren't pretending when they were hiding away in their rooms. So eventually, when they go out boldly, you know it has to be God. So I want to move into celebrating God's power as we see in Jesus' resurrection, even when we don't see it or feel it. And I don't know where everyone is today. Some of you may be doing wonderfully, and you just want to rejoice. But some of you out there might feel bleak and dark, and like God isn't doing anything in your life. God gives us the power to change. He gives us the power not to sin. He gives us victory, joy, and the fullness of life. So I want to encourage you to re-envision the amazing hope God has for your life and to let God speak about the vision for your life. We're going to take the Lord's Supper now. And maybe the ushers can come up. We're going to be celebrating our bread of affliction, which is Jesus' body, and our cup of redemption, Jesus' new covenant in his blood. You don't have to lean to the left, but you can if you want to. Maybe if you all, as the music plays, you can all come up and take the elements and then return to your seat and wait, and we will take together. If you want to, we're small enough, you can just make your way one aisle at a time. The dark is wine, the light is grape juice. And there's matzah appropriately for the season. Please come forward and take the elements. So everyone has the elements, the wine and bread. I'll say the blessings that are very similar to what Jesus would have prayed that night. And then we'll celebrate the supper together afterwards with a declaration of his rising. So, Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam borei pri hagefen. Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam hamotzi lechem min haaretz. He is risen. Let me try that one again. He is risen.
He is risen.
He's risen indeed.
He's risen indeed.